I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, December 20th. Crime is up nationally. Inflation is up nationally. Omicron is up nationally. President Biden plans a COVID speech to the nation tomorrow. Voting rights are down. Abortion rights are down. The supply chain, including rapid tests, is down. And as of yesterday, President Biden's human infrastructure or Build Back Better bill for paid family leave and much more went down with no Republican alternative for America's need for child care or elder care, pre-K or paid family leave, more college affordability or ways to protect the climate. There was no Republican version that claimed a better way. So the effort died in its present form when Joe Manchin officially became the only Democratic senator to announce he would vote no if it comes to the floor with the 50 Republicans.
If I can't go home and explain it to the people of West Virginia, I can't vote for it. And I cannot vote to continue with this piece of legislation. I just can't. I've tried everything humanly possible. I can't get there.
You're done. This is a no.
This is a no.
Senator Manchin on Fox News Sunday with the host Brett Baer. We know Manchin's issues include protecting the coal industry, which is big in his home state. The issues he prefers to talk about are more economic, like more promised benefits in the bill than actual funding, allegedly, and the risk of inflation from such a big spending package, allegedly. But Senator Bernie Sanders responded on CNN with the even bigger spending bill that Manchin voted for without a second thought.
Joe Manchin voted for a huge increase in military spending. Manchin voted for an infrastructure bill, which added $250 billion to the deficit. The truth of the matter is that if you look at the military budget, $770 billion times that by 10 years, it is four times higher than what the Build Back Better plan is. Now, you know, Mr. Manchin says he's representing the people of West Virginia. Okay, why don't you do a poll? It's CNN, do a poll, and you ask the people of West Virginia whether or not they want to lower the cost of prescription drugs. You ask them whether they want to expand Medicare to cover dental, hearing, and eyeglasses. You ask them whether they want to continue the $300 payment to help working parents in these very difficult times bring up their kids with dignity. Ask them if they want to deal with climate change. Mm-hmm. On all of those issues, I suspect people of West Virginia, like every other state in this country, will say, yes, do the right thing for working families.
Senator Bernie Sanders on CNN State of the Union. And with that, we welcome Anita Kumar, senior editor for Standards and Ethics at Politico, previously White House correspondent covering Biden and before that Trump. Thanks for coming on, Anita. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me back.
So White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki released a very critical statement, blistering, really, yesterday, making it sound like Manchin betrayed President Biden. The statement said in part, "Weeks ago, Senator Manchin committed to the president at his home in Wilmington to support the Build Back Better framework that the president then subsequently announced. Senator Manchin pledged repeatedly to negotiate on finalizing that framework in good faith," unquote from White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. So what happened with President Biden and Senator Joe Manchin?
Yeah, I mean, the statement you're referencing was really blistering and really unusual for the White House and for this White House. It was lengthy as well. You know, it's a great question what happened. You know, what Jen Psaki is also saying is that Senator Manchin had in person given a written proposal that was the same size and scope of the framework that the Democrats were working on and that had continued to go there. I mean, what we had heard is that he did give a heads up, not personally, but had a staffer give a heads up to the White House and to Democrats that this was coming, but just right before he went on air to do this. I mean, anyone who's been sort of following this probably wasn't really surprised. It's been, what, 5 months or so that the two sides have been negotiating and not really getting anywhere. And some of his statements, as you know, had said he was worried about the scope. He was worried about inflation. He was worried about COVID and other issues. And so that's what he ended up saying was, look, we've got other things to deal with right now. You know, I would note that he's not completely closing the door. I'll bet you that the White House is trying to negotiate with him, whether this happens in 1 month or 2 months or 3 months or never. We just don't know yet.
The Bernie Sanders clip there, which raises at least two issues. One is the much bigger defense spending bill at a time when nobody is contemplating any large-scale United States war, right? Neither party is for anything like that. So why wasn't there more of a ruckus about that or that kind of comparison being front and center in the debate over recent weeks by Democrats or, for that matter, by America First Republicans before Congress voted for the defense spending bill?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, there's been a lot of talk this year about hypocrisy, right? Members of Congress voting for one thing and then saying no to another thing. You heard that on voting rights just last week, where people are saying, well, look, you know, they'll agree to change the rules in the Senate for one thing, but they won't for another thing. And it's a great question we've been asked over and over again. But I can just tell you that Joe Manchin has, just like everybody else, his priorities and things that he wants to get through. And we know that he did not like some of the climate provisions. He didn't like the paid leave, family leave, that provision. He didn't like child tax credit. And he balked at the overall price tag. So there were a lot of hurdles to get through. And he reached a point where he just said, I'm not going to do this anymore.
And Sanders raised, as he has before, the idea of a poll of Joe Manchin's constituents. How do you think that would really come out?
Yeah, it's a good question. I haven't seen the latest polls from West Virginia, but Joe Manchin would tell you, even if they all support it, that he has to do what he thinks is right. And he has talked, it's part of his sort of persona as a senator from West Virginia, is that he doesn't care if he goes against his party, if he goes against Republicans, if he goes against anyone, that he's sort of one of those people, we might have called it in a different era, sort of a maverick, someone who bucks the party and just does whatever he wants and does what he thinks is right. So you will see across the board, though, across the country, that there has been support for the president's agenda and for this spending plan, people individually supporting different pieces of it. And of course, the overall bill that would have put sort of a record number of dollars on climate and combating climate change and social safety net and the social safety net.
And Sanders raised, as he has before, the idea of the poll. But is it all about the coal industry for Manchin ultimately, and maybe even his own family investments in it?
You know, we have reported on that, and others have as well. Obviously, we know where he stands in terms of the families, you know, his family, but we also know what he has said publicly in general, not just about this bill, but about the importance of the coal industry in his state. So he has talked about that and made that sort of one of those issues that he feels strongly about. I will say he's referenced his objections went beyond just the climate provisions, although that was a big one. He has indicated to people that he wanted less programs in there. So what they ended up doing, if you remember, this bill was really cut in half. Instead of cutting out a lot of the policies or the specific programs, they kind of just shrunk them all. And Joe Manchin didn't like that that way. He wanted some of them to just be cut out completely. And so the approach was not the approach he liked. Now, the White House, I will say, as we saw in that Jen Psaki statement, will say, no, that's not the case. He has said he would go for something that was this size. So we have some conflicting information here. But what my colleagues have been reporting from the Hill is that he didn't like this approach, and it went beyond climate change.
And for some Democrats, it goes beyond Build Back Better to a question of basic democracy and structural reform that some would say is needed maybe in the Constitution itself. Here is Congresswoman from Queens and the Bronx, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, on Morning Joe on MSNBC this morning.
I represent more or just as many or more people than Joe Manchin does, perhaps more. But secondly, and importantly, is that if you can't explain to your constituents why the child tax credit that they are getting right now to help feed their kids in a time of record high prices should not be extended, that doesn't seem like a problem with his constituents. That seems like a problem with his ability to either communicate or really, I think there's a different reason behind this vote.
And so AOC went on to say what she thinks the President of the United States, Joe Biden, and others in the top leadership of the Democratic Party could do.
It takes the President of the United States, who I believe needs to be more forceful on the filibuster. He needs to also lean, I believe, on his executive authority and say, if you're going to get in the way, we're going to find other ways to do this. And it's either you're either with us or you're not with us. But this train is moving and we need to govern because the United States House of Representatives is delivering an agenda for the people. We cannot blame Mitch McConnell and we cannot blame Joe Manchin either because we have tools at our disposal with a trifecta.
So, Anita, so much interesting stuff in there.
Yeah.
For one thing, the very long-term and structural issue that they can't do anything about right away, although maybe they can if they decide to end the filibuster, that the Senate is so unrepresentative compared to the House. She said Joe Manchin represents about the same number of people as a senator from West Virginia who gets all that voting power as one of only 100 members of the Senate as she represents from one congressional district.
Yeah, I mean, really what we're hearing is, you know, so many different arguments. We've even heard some Democrats say, look, maybe he shouldn't be in the Democratic Party. The big argument we keep hearing this last sort of 24 hours and what really people are coalescing in the Democratic Party around is one of the issues she said there, which is why do we have this 60 vote threshold in the Senate? That it absolutely should be a majority, right? And that they should get rid of the filibuster. Now, we've been hearing this since January. We've been hearing it since before January, but it's really, gotten a lot stronger of an argument since January that people are making in the Democratic Party that they need to get things done, that they have the House, the Senate, the White House, and they may not have that in 2023. After the next elections at the end of, in November 2022. And so they have to use the tools. You heard her talking about that. And so there are a lot of people saying, well, look, this is the last straw. Next year when we come back, we have to get rid of the filibuster. It's unclear what's going to happen because, and in fact, they need Joe Manchin and others to be supportive of that. And he hasn't been supportive. It's not just him. There are others. You mentioned at the top there, voting rights, this big, talk about whether they could try to get that done by the end of the year. That also didn't go anywhere. And so people are saying, look, come on, Democrats are saying, let's remove that 60 vote threshold and get some of these things done. Even the president has changed his tune a little bit as the year has gone on. You see him at the beginning of the year pretty strongly in favor of keeping things the same. And now the White House has sort of hinted as the months have gone on, well, maybe we have to look at some other ways to get things done.
Anita, on the Fox News Sunday roundtable yesterday, after Manchin's announcement on that show, several of the reporters, and from different points of view, I would say, on the political spectrum, suggested some of these popular things in Build Back Better could come back as smaller bills. The child tax credit, paid family leave, maybe others. Do you think that's possible in early 2022 before the congressional election year really gets going?
I do think that's possible. I think one of the things that we sort of learned from these last 5 months is how difficult it's going to be to get this thing through. And so there are people telling, Democrats telling the White House, look, if you want to get some of this done, break it apart, make it smaller. Honestly, people have been saying that since the very beginning of this administration, since January, about a variety of things, about immigration reform, about all these things that the administration and Democrats want to do. It's so hard for Congress to wrap its head around something so massive. And if they break it apart, it might have ideas, it might be able to get through. And so that, I think that is a possibility a lot of people are talking about. I will tell you, it's going to be super hard to get anything controversial done in 2022. Once they come back in January, it's going to really everything is going to be geared towards this is an election year. It's the midterm year. We thought things were political in 2021. They're going to take a different tone in 2022, even more so. So it's going to be tough, but they could definitely try to go that way.
And
one of the reasons we should say that the Democrats did not try to break up this bill into different fairly popular pieces originally is, and we get these calls all the time, people say, well, if the public likes paid family leave, put out a paid family leave bill. If they like universal pre-K, put out a universal pre-K bill and pick these things off and let's do a lot of this. And they will successfully pressure the Democrats, the Republicans, because the Republicans' constituents will say, oh, I get it now, and they will want those things. But as I understand it, you only get a certain number of bites at the apple under the rules of the Senate to do it in the so-called reconciliation format, which means you can get around the filibuster. So they put a lot of things together in the one bill because they couldn't put through two bills under the rules. How accurate is that?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I guess you would also have to look at something else, which is there are a lot of things in this bill. I mean, it's not like they're going to pass 30 bills anyway. I mean, the Congress would not go there. It's just not going to happen. It's hard enough to pass one bill, even a small bill. Everything is so incredibly difficult now that the president felt like he had to put all those things together. Remember, this bill has already been cut in half from his original proposal. So it's already gotten smaller. And, you know, their perspective is, look, we're trying to meet halfway. We're trying to find a compromise. There, when the White House put out a revised plan in October, paid family leave, one of the president's biggest priorities, wasn't even included. And the reason is because they didn't think they could get it through. So I guess I would just say to you is, it's not realistic to think, even if the rules allowed it, that they would get 20 or 30 bills. They know that through the Congress, they know they have to pick their shots, they have to do what they can, and there's only likely to be a couple things. So if they decide, hey, let's make this smaller again, or let's just look at paid family leave or the child tax credit or climate, they could do that, but they're not going to get a lot through. So if they come back next year and it's really they can't get this bill through, you might see them look at a couple different programs or a much, much smaller bill.
Biden will speak on Omicron tomorrow. We see this wave really scary, the way it's taking off, the way it's so much more transmissible than Delta. And I think we have good news and bad news from South Africa and from scientists. The wave seems to have already peaked and is declining in South Africa, but the populations are so different. The previous exposure to any variant is so much more widespread in South Africa. And scientists are not saying that they're convinced that it's a milder variant of COVID. I know you're not a scientist. We're going to do scientist segments, obviously, going forward on this. But in terms of national response, what is President Biden planning tomorrow? I see he's going to give a speech.
Yeah, I don't think you'll be surprised to hear some of it. He's going to talk about the difference between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, and he's going to encourage the unvaccinated to get out there and get the vaccine. He's going to encourage people to get the booster shot. He's going to talk about testing. So none of those things are surprising. That's been what he's been conveying for quite some time. He's also going to say that the federal government is there, the resources are there, that they're going to help those that are hard hit. But I do think that you're starting to see a shift from him and his administration on talking about sort of the number of cases to sort of the severity of those cases, right? So you're going to see a lot of cases going up, and we already are, but he's going to talk about, look, the severity and the hospitalizations are those that are unvaccinated. You remember back a while ago in the summer, he talked about sort of the freedom from the virus, that we want to have the freedom for the virus. Don't think you're going to hear that kind of message anymore. It's more how we live with this virus. And of course, that goes back to how you live with it is you might get vaccinated, you might get boosted, you might continue testing. And so, he knows that there's fatigue from people trying to deal with this issue. And he's going to talk about how we can get through this if you do certain things. And so where he's going to talk about sort of living with that virus.
Two things real quick on this, and then we're out of time. One is that rapid tests are rising as a tool, but there are shortages, and they are not free for most people, including those with insurance, who still usually have to first spend the money out of pocket. Should we expect anything more on that from the president tomorrow?
Yeah, this has been a big criticism of the United States and the administration. They haven't done more. Of course, you know, in other countries, they're free. They're available. If you'll recall his last big speech, I mean, he talks about COVID all the time, but a speech he had in December, he talked about how they were going to make more tests available. And there have been complaints that that hasn't happened. You're exactly right. They're very costly. You know, some people can't afford them. I do think you're going to see a push from the administration to try to get that both better, that the costs will be down and that there'll be more available. And so I do think testing is a big issue, and they know that they have gotten criticism about that. If you'll recall, in December, he said, we will send tests to community centers and around the country so that people are able to be tested. And there was a lot of criticism about exactly what you said, that you had to pay out of pocket and then get reimbursed. So don't know if there's going to be a change on that, but I expect him to talk about testing.
And last question, has the president announced a time for this speech tomorrow? Selfishly, I want to know if it's going to be during our show. I'm sure people will want to know if it's going to be in prime time. Do you know?
I do not know. I haven't seen that, and I haven't seen if the White House has put out anything. I don't think they have. They just said he'll do it. So sometimes they announce those things the day before, so we might hear today.
Anita Kumar, after years as White House correspondent and obviously still paying attention to that beat, she is senior editor for Standards and Ethics at Politico. Anita, thanks as always.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.